Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. He's on X at C Fowler BCM. It's been a couple of weeks. How are you, brother?
I'm doing wonderful. Glad to be back after you were on your vacation last week. So we've missed a little bit of time together, but glad you got a vacation in. I'm a little bit jealous, but still happy for you at the same time. Other than burning your back, I'm not jealous of that.
Well, yeah. It was just one of those things. We were on this uncomfortable boat. I was going to see the turtles, the sea turtles, and I had my big back up while I was snorkeling, and I didn't realize that I was getting burnt as bad as I was over an hour and a half period, because I felt it was a beautiful water. The ocean water felt good on my back, and I did not know I was getting absolutely torched the entire time.
Yep, large white surfaces.
Yes, the sun definitely got attracted by my white back. There's no doubt about it. But how have you been, man? How have you been? How about that?
Everything's been good. No complaints. I think we're finally in the summer-ish weather, which makes me happy. I'm not freezing cold anymore as of right now. So,
yeah,
when it's warm outside and everything's green, I'm not going to complain nearly as much as when I walk outside and it's 25.
Now, what I missed while I was out of town was Barack Okoji and Tyrese Hunter, and I know we're late on that, but let me know about what you think about those two additions, and then we'll get to sort of other roster needs.
Yeah, I think they're most certainly different. And Tyrese Hunter, you've got a guy that's contributed a lot throughout his career, including his time at Texas, and can do a little bit of everything. He's an unselfish player. He can pass the ball, which is something that this team needed after adding Colby Rogers. You see more of a two-guard style in the way that he plays. And then just looking at the backcourt with P.J. Haggerty, Colby Rogers, Tyrese Hunter, you kind of see, I don't even want to say hierarchy, but you see kind of how they can play together and work together. And I think there's multiple different ways to do that. And obviously Penny and the staff will figure that out over the summer and going into the season. But I like what he brings because, like I said, unselfish, not a guy that needs the ball a ton, but can score in multiple different ways. Also is a good passer. And then Baraka Okoji, I think, is more of a developmental prospect. I think the talent is obviously there, but after 1 year at George Mason, there are things that he needs to work on to be a contributor at this level. He's not a great three-point shooter as of right now. He plays a little bit out of control, out of control sometimes. So I think he might take a year or two to be a real contributor, but I like his upside a lot. So I think it's two more good additions. One, obviously, that will help right away in Tyrese Hunter, and then another one in Baraka Okoji that is kind of looking more towards the future, which is something that you and I specifically have been clamoring about and saying there needs to be guys that are set up once these guys leave. And Baraka Okoji could potentially be that player if he does develop the way the staff believes he can.
All right, now here's the truth of it, though. We haven't heard much on the guys being added front since then. And Jaden Quaintance ends up postponing and ultimately canceling his visit to Memphis. He will not be coming to Memphis now that he committed to Arizona State. That's a big that you really wanted to see potentially get on campus as a five-star, but it looked like the NIL money was a little bit too much to overcome. Now TJ Bamba from Villanova, that's one that we're looking at as another potential sort of backcourt member. But what are the needs right now? It looks like they're going to need 2 to 3 more frontcourt members, and Penny said he wants to get this thing done by early June, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's where it has to start right now is in the front court, currently with Dane Danger and Nick Jourdain. I don't think you're in bad position there, but I think you need someone that is reliable. Sounds kind of negative, like more reliable sounds a little bit negative, but I think you need someone that's a little more of a sure thing, I guess, if that makes sense. Because I think Dane Danger, the jury's still out a little bit on how he will fit just according to the style that he played at Illinois. And then with Nick Jourdain, you kind of know what you have. He's a solid big, but not a ton of high upside. He's not someone that if PJ Haggerty's having an off night, he can't carry an offense. And I don't necessarily think they need a front court member that can carry an offense, but a guy that can score, you know, 10, 12 points per game, somewhere between 7, 9, even an upside of 10 rebounds per game every single night, is what they need in the front court. I called it last night on the podcast the centerpiece of the front court, and we kind of talked about more in depth what that meant. It's not necessarily a star player or someone with, you know, a flashy name. It's just someone that's consistent night in and
reliability.
Night out.
Reliability. You need reliability.
You need reliability, and you need at least a decent upside from whoever they eventually add in the front court. At least two guys there. And then a true wing, because right now I think this backcourt has been built very well, which I think should give us hope for how the front court will be built. But you also need, you know, versatile athletic wing, even if it's a 3-and-D guy, just someone who can contribute a little bit offensively and then be a spark plug on the defensive end. So I think they still have needs, but I'm a big fan of how they built so far, because they started with the backcourt, which is typical for Penny Hardaway and what he wants to do. And I think they're very solidified there now. And it's about adding the bigger guys now, about adding a wing or two and then 2 or 3 more guys in the front court to really round out this roster. And with saying 3 guys in the front court, that could be, you know, 2 guys that can contribute this year. And then like Baraka Okoji, a guy that could be maybe a little bit more developmental.
Yeah. Now, Penny says his goal, and obviously he said it on the Penny Hardaway TV show that was recorded on April 12th, so he had a little bit more time before it actually released on this past Sunday, or the 28th. But he said his goal is to get the entire team on campus by June. Doesn't seem like that's a very high likelihood. That has a very high likelihood of happening. But I don't know if that's the end-all, be-all. If he can get the whole team on, fill up these 5, 6 scholarships, depending on if David Jones comes back or not. If he can fill them up by July or early August before the semester starts, I think that's just as good. It's better than having somebody come in December, that type of thing, where you could interrupt some of the team chemistry, that type of thing, when you get into season.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. June is highly unlikely. Nothing's impossible, so it could happen, but seeing 5 or 6 commits in a calendar month, especially when these guys are, you know, being recruited by different schools and offered different amounts of money from different schools, there's just a lot of factors that go into that. So we'll see how that plays out. But I'm with you. Ultimately, if you get everybody in July, early August before classes start, I think you have to do that. I know there have been some solid additions early in the season and even, you know, later in the season by Penny throughout his tenure, but even if they're super talented players, I think it just throws things off, because I think you have a pecking order set once you have your guys on campus. And if you add someone, you know, right before the season or early in the season, you're throwing that off. You're throwing off guys' roles, and you could be changing roles where guys fit perfectly in them already. So even though in the headlines and things like that, it looks really good, it may be worse for the team down the stretch. And so I think just getting everything settled before classes start would be my 100% deadline. Like, it has to be done before classes start, early August at the latest, and really get guys integrated, you know, not only in the system, but with their teammates, because we know this is pretty much an entirely new team. So just giving them some time to gain some chemistry and to gel and to understand, okay, this is my role, this is what's expected of me on a nightly basis, and this is how I need to feel that every day in practice and then in the games as well. So I think it's important to have it before classes. June seems highly unlikely, though.
Yeah, it really does. Talking with Christian Fowler, at C. Fowler BCM on X, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We also have a podcast that comes out every single Tuesday at noon called the On the Bluff Podcast. Find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. When it comes to what Penny said on his TV show as well, he was talking about the Arkansas series potentially opening back up, or at least an Arkansas game potentially opening back up. And he said that he thinks that the pressure can be put on by the fans on John Calipari to make it happen. I don't know if John Calipari will be swayed by fans, but the fact that Penny Hardaway's talking about it and saying it's a realistic option makes me feel like there is definitely conversations behind closed doors happening about it at this moment, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, you would think with him actually speaking publicly about it, there'd have to be some kind of preliminary discussions, conversations being had. And I think it's obviously good for Memphis, and it's what Penny wants to do. He wants to have difficult out-of-conference games, and it's exactly what he should do with the strength of the conference now. And I also agree with you on Cal's not going to be influenced by the fans. Arkansas fans, Memphis fans, whoever, can clamor for it as much as they want, but I just don't see that influencing Calipari's decision too much. But with that being said, I think there is interest, obviously, from both fan bases. Historically, it just makes sense to kind of bring this back, even without Calipari being there and the history between Memphis and him. I think it makes sense, but then you add that layer to it as well, which could be a lot of fun. So I think Memphis fans definitely want it done. Arkansas fans, I believe, want it done as well. So it'd be a cool addition if they were able to find a way to get Arkansas on the schedule, whether that's going there or a neutral site game or whatever it is. Getting that done, I think, would be a pretty big deal for the University of Memphis.
More so than fans, it's going to have to be the John Tysons of the world, the Tyson Chicken guy of the world. They're going to have to make that happen. They're going to have to sort of get in Cal's ear to ultimately open that back up, because it doesn't seem like he's been overly receptive in the past. And I know in Kentucky it was different. Arkansas, we know that there's some familiarity there, so it's a little, it's definitely different than Kentucky was. But this is going to have to be the big boosters telling Cal, hey, let's get this done. Let's make something happen.
Yeah, there's going to have to be people with more pull and with more monetary interest that have to speak to Cal and talk to Cal about this than just the fan base. Because like we both have just mentioned, that's not really in his nature to take into account too much what the fan base thinks he should do or the university should do. So if you get people, big boosters and whoever else has sway that starts saying it's a good idea on paper and that it should be done, then I think he's more inclined to make a decision to go ahead and do that.
Now, it's also looking like in some Tiger basketball news, Andre Turner may be hired as an assistant coach. We know he spent 1982 to 1986 with Memphis State. Phenomenal. 84-85 with Dana Kirk. They made it all the way to the Final Four, lost to Villanova. That could be a really positive, fun addition to a coaching staff that Penny Hardaway continues to try to put together. I just like, and we've seen it on the football side as well, I like seeing former Tigers come back. There's just an understanding of what's expected of them in this city, how this city operates, and what these programs actually mean to the city at large.
Yeah, completely agree. He's been at Mitchell, correct?
He was at Mitchell, and then he was at Lane. He was at Lane for the past three seasons.
Right. So when I first started podcasting in 2019, I did the first few episodes with former Memphis Tiger Trey Draper, who was an assistant coach at Mitchell at the time. Unfortunately, we didn't get to do a lot of episodes together before he got the job at IMG Academy. But we did a couple of episodes at Mitchell High School, and I was there a decent bit during that time for 5 or 6 weeks. So I got to spend at least a little bit of time with Andre Turner, and he's just such a good dude. Like, he has one of those infectious personalities. Every time I was around him, at least, he was just in such a good mood and so willing to talk, and had no problem sharing stories or sharing wisdom while I was there. And Trey Draper has been a good friend of mine since then, and he never had anything but very, very positive things to say about Andre Turner. And Trey's someone that I really trust, And so even though I haven't spent a ton of time with Andre Turner, everything I've heard about him from people I trust and my personal experience being around him, just an awesome human being.
Well, so I think I'd imagine he'd be able to coach up some point guards, guards.
Yeah.
He was a very cerebral player back in the day. He was a true point guard back in the day. Hopefully he can, if he ultimately gets added, which it's looking like that's going to happen, I would imagine he'd be able to coach up some of these backcourt members, along with Penny Hardaway.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great addition, not only because I think he is a good coach and has a good coach personality, but also, like you mentioned, like former players having that pipeline to come back. And it always makes a cool story when someone who played at the university comes back to coach or comes back in some kind of capacity. So I'm definitely on board for it. I think it'd be a great addition for Penny and the staff.
All right, now NFL draft, no Tigers taken for the second straight year. I was blown away Blake Watson didn't get picked, Christian. And I think you're sort of in that same boat as well. But I figured, just sort of looking at his skill set, how he tested in his pro day, ran a 4.39, jumped to 41.5 vert, 10.9 broad. Those would all have been top five numbers in the NFL combine among running backs if he was actually invited to the NFL combine. And maybe that tells a story in itself. Usually you have to get the invite to the NFL combine before people really expect you to be picked. But I thought, just looking at what he did last year, his pass catching ability, his ability to break tackles, mixed with the athleticism that's very clear from his pro day numbers, I thought it would have been easy to pick him rounds 5 through 7, but he gets an undrafted free agent look from the Broncos, and we'll see if he can break through in that running back room.
Yeah, I mean, the surprises for me started when he wasn't invited to the combine,
right.
And like you said, maybe there's more of a story there. Maybe we should have been more privy to the way that people viewed him from that point, as far as, you know, NFL GMs and owners and people that were scouting. But you look at what draft analysts were saying, and not like jackleg draft analysts, like legitimate draft analysts. And you spoke on this last night, including Mel Kiper, and people I know have mixed feelings on him. But regardless, he's been doing it for 40 years, so he's got to know something.
Yeah.
A lot of people had him with a fourth or fifth round grade. So to see him go undrafted was really shocking to me. And both you and I are guys that pay attention all the way to the very end of the draft. And I'm constantly looking at, you know, best players available and big boards and stuff. And a lot of draft analysts had him as the top running back available from the fifth round on. And so to not see him get picked was pretty wild. And the only theory I can come up with is just age and tread on the tires from his time at Old Dominion and then Memphis. But you made a perfect point, and I'm going to speak on that now because this is something I didn't even think about, but makes perfect sense. Running backs usually don't make it to a second contract anyway.
Right.
So even if he's got tread on the tires, and even if he's an older running back prospect, like he still can serve for 3 or 4 years and probably be perfectly fine. And I think, I don't want to say he has a true three down skill set because I don't know if he necessarily has the size. But as far as skill set and watching the tape, if you just let the tape talk for itself, he proved at both stops that he was at in college that he does have a three-down skill set. And so overall, very strange that he wasn't drafted. Also a very strange landing spot with the Denver Broncos, who have Javonte Williams, who drafted Audric Estime, who has a very similar skill set to Javonte Williams. Jaleel McLaughlin also there. I think he was a UDFA last year. And had some success at times with them, kind of as that third down back. So a weird landing spot, but I think regardless, even if he gets cut in training camp or whatever by the Broncos, I think he will land somewhere and be on a roster this year because I think he just offers too many different things, and then also the attrition at the running back position is just too much for guys like him with his level of talent not to find a job at some point.
No doubt. No doubt about it. I mean, like, at the very least, land on a practice squad somewhere and be elevated for a couple of weeks in his rookie year. I don't see why that wouldn't be a realistic proposition, but we'll see. Now, talking with Christian Fowler, NFL draft, who jumped off the page for you? What draft classes jumped off the page? Who won, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
It's hard not to go straight to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's almost unanimous. if you look at
one of my it was one of my favorite classes, without question.
Yeah, if you look at post draft coverage now, the majority of reputable sites have them at least in the top three, and most of them have them at number one. And that pains me to say. My best friend is a Steelers fan, so even to say that is tough, but it's the truth. You look at the first round, they get arguably a top three tackle. In my opinion, I think he was either the second or third best tackle, and Troy Faltano out of Washington, who offers position versatility, can play guard or tackle. A lot of people had him slated as a guard until the combine, when we saw the measurements for, you know, hand size and arm length and stuff like that. So I think they got a day one starter there. They turn around in the second round and they draft Zach Frazier out of West Virginia, who a lot of people, including myself, believe would have been a first-round pick, or at least had a first-round grade, if he didn't break his leg towards the end of the season. I think he could be a plug-and-play starter as well at center, and that's, you know, coming from an organization in Pittsburgh that is known for, you know, good center play throughout their history. So they knocked it. If it was just those two picks alone, I think they got two day-one starters there. But they also get Roman Wilson in the third round, which, according to a lot of people, was a high value. A lot of people had a second-round grade on him, which filled a need there because they traded away Deontay Johnson to the Carolina Panthers. So he comes in, obviously will compete for that number two receiver job. I think he ran a 4.39 at the combine, so another speed guy to pair with George Pickens. I think he's a little bit more polished as a route runner coming out. Further in the draft, they take Peyton Wilson in the fourth round, who this was a guy that a lot of people said had first-round tape. If you just watched his tape, he had first-round talent, but medicals didn't line up. I think one of his knees, he does not have an ACL in, and I think that made some teams take him off their board overall. But he was, at worst, in my opinion, the second-best linebacker in this class, behind Edgerrin Cooper, or you could put him ahead of him. I think they're very, very comparable prospects, and they got him a 98th overall, I believe. So just they killed it. And then they got Mason McCormick as well from South Dakota State.
Who has a great athleticism score. He was one of the best.
I think he was a two-time FCS All-American at South Dakota State. So another guy that could be a depth piece on the offensive line and can play multiple positions. So they killed it in every aspect. It's hard not to point to them and say it was the best one. There's some other ones out there I like. I love what the Chiefs did. I love what the Detroit Lions did as far as retooling their secondary by getting Terrion Arnold, trading up to get Terrion Arnold in the first round, and then getting Enos Rakestraw as well. Kansas City Chiefs getting Xavier Worthy in the first round was a great add. Kingsley, you're going to have to say the last name for me.
No, I don't even try to make me do it. He's from a tackle from BYU. How about that?
A tackle from BYU, who a lot of people thought was going to go late first round. A lot of people mocked him to go to the Chiefs in the first round. So they addressed two major needs by getting a tackle and a wide receiver. So those teams really stuck out. Eagles as well. I think they got two starters in the secondary, and Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, and had great depth adds as well with Will Shipley and Jeremiah Trotter Jr. So That would be the ones that jump off the page to me, just off the top of my head.
Were you blown away by the quarterback run at the top of the draft, though? Six in the top 12. I expected potentially six in the first round. Like, I figured Bo Nix and Michael Penix could be somewhere in the 20s. But Michael Penix at 8, Bo Nix at 12, looks like J.J. McCarthy at 10. That was a ridiculous run in the top 12 of quarterbacks. Just the overdrafting of quarterbacks, I know it's always a story. Right, because the hit rate's not that big on first-round quarterbacks, just because, you know, it's tough, depending on the situation they get dropped into. But that was a crazy run at the top of the draft that I don't know if a lot of people expected, at least in the top 12 picks.
Yeah, I mean, it tied the 1983 draft for the most quarterbacks taken in the first round, and it happened in the first 12 picks. And that draft produced John Elway and Dan Marino, and I think there were some other really quality quarterbacks in there as well that I just can't remember off the top of my head. But you talk about the overdrafting, and it's all about the importance of the position and what it means. And truthfully, in my mind, and I know this isn't a popular take necessarily, I really only think two quarterbacks were overdrafted. I think J.J. McCarthy went way too high, and I think Bo Nix went way too high. I know most people weren't consensus as high on Michael Penix Jr. Some people, I think Bleacher Report had him down at like 87th overall, which I thought was just
insane.
Absurd. But I thought Michael Penix Jr. was a legit like top 15 talent. I know a lot of people were hard on him after the Michigan game. You got to look at the whole story. I mean, that was one game against the best defense in the country. They schemed very well against him. They had, you look at Michigan's secondary and it's incredible. They had the only secondary that can match up against Washington's trio of receivers in Rome Odunze and Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan. So they matched up bad against him, and he just didn't have his best game. But overall, I thought he was a top 15 quarterback. I thought he was, you could make an argument that he was the third best quarterback over Drake May. I know Drake May's 21, Michael Penix Jr. is 24 and has a long injury history. But just going off of tape, Michael Penix Jr. had the third best at the worst. Yeah. I mean, Jaden Daniels really had one good year. Caleb Williams, obviously his tape speaks for itself, but just going on film, you could say Michael Penix Jr. was the second best quarterback in the class as a whole.
You just look at J.J. McCarthy, right, where they talk about him winning, how much of a winner he was. And listen, I'll give respect to that. He won a national championship game, 15-0. He was 27-1 as a starter. But Michael Penix Jr., when we talk about like places that are not used to winning at the level that they won at, Indiana and Washington, that dude was, right. He should have gotten a lot more credit for being a winner.
Right. I mean, he had Indiana as a top 10 team several years ago and then took Washington to a national championship for the first time since 1991. So what he did is on a completely different level. And then you look at the supporting cast. Yes, I know Washington had a lot of players drafted, but it's hard to make an argument for Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, and Jalen Polk without Michael Penix. I think Roger Rosengarten and Troy Faltano, those are products of, you give more credit to the offensive line coach there and Kalen DeBoer on what they brought in. But Michigan, you looked at what they had drafted last year. I think they had 13 players drafted this year. Yep. And I was looking at a 2025 mock yesterday, and they had 4 first-round picks in there as well. So it's just like that was a team that just oozed with talent. And no, it wasn't receiver talent. Really, the only receiver that's going to be talked about is Roman Wilson. But you look at the offensive line, basically that whole offensive line that he played with will be drafted at some point. You look at Blake Corum and how good he was. And then defensively, I mean, they were just absolutely loaded. You know, 2022, 2023, and 2024, just completely loaded. So I know that your scouts watch him and say that he has talent and that he has leadership abilities and kind of that trait that you can't define in quarterbacks that we just refer to as it.
Yep.
A lot of people have said that he's had that, but to spend a top 10 pick on him and to trade up a spot as the Minnesota Vikings did, I just didn't see it. I could be wrong. I didn't think Justin Herbert was going to be great coming out of Oregon. So you never know, but Michael Penix Jr. just as a prospect to me was definitely better than J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix by quite a fair amount.
Yeah, now let's be honest, though, about the Michael Penix Jr. pick. 8 to the Falcons. Five. Listen, I said this on that Friday after round one. I am not going to crap all over Michael Penix Jr. I'm not going to do that because I think he is a phenomenal prospect, and you've went through all the reasons. We've gone through all the reasons that is the case. The landing spot, though, the pick itself, one of the worst picks, most embarrassing picks of my lifetime for sure. I couldn't understand it for the Falcons, who just signed Kirk Cousins to a $180 million contract, $100 million guaranteed.
Yeah, it really doesn't make sense. And there's no angle you can look at it or argument you can make that makes sense. Even on the front end, if you go, okay, they've got a quarterback that's coming off an Achilles injury. He's in his mid-30s. He probably doesn't have much longer. So, okay, that makes sense. But it doesn't because they just paid him 4 years, $180 million. So that point is kind of null and void. To take a 24-year-old rookie who, if Kirk Cousins does play out his contract, would be 28 before he took meaningful snaps in the NFL, right. It doesn't make sense, especially when you're looking at a team that has really built their offense up in the draft over the last several years. They've had top 10 picks the last 3 years, and they took Bijan Robinson in the 23 draft, the year before that, Drake London, the year before that, Kyle Pitts. So they have a good offensive core. They also got Darnell Mooney in free agency. They also traded for Rondale Moore from the Cardinals. So it's not the best receiving core in the league, but it's solid, especially when you add Kyle Pitts into that mix. The backfield would be Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier. The offensive line is one of the top, probably top 10 at worst in the league. Right. So offensively, they're pretty loaded. And you say defensively, they were 30th in pass rush win rate last year. They weren't able to get to the quarterback at all. And you look at where they pick, and they could have had any defensive player they wanted, whether that was Leiatu Latu, whether that was Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Byron Murphy, if they wanted to pair someone next to Grady Jarrett. So they had needs defensively that they didn't meet because they chose to take a quarterback that is, at least on paper, when you look at it, going to sit for 4 years. And then when you look even further into their draft, it makes less sense because their next three picks came on the defensive line. They got Ruka Horohoro from Clemson as a defensive tackle. They got Braylon Trice, a defensive end from Washington. They got Brandon Dorlus, a defensive lineman from
Oregon. Which I think all three relatively decent picks.
Yeah, I think they can all contribute. But when you look, you go, okay, they clearly knew what their number one need was because they took three consecutive defensive linemen in the second, third, and fourth round, but they ignored it in the first round to get a guy that's going to sit. And it doesn't make sense. It's not a sensible move. It's not a good move, especially when they could have landed a cornerstone defensive player for the next X years. You know, I mean, if you believe in what people say Dallas Turner is, and I think I'm on that bandwagon, that he could turn into eventually an elite pass rusher in this league, and you missed out on that to take a guy that cannot help you for, on paper, at least 4 years.
Yeah, it could age even more pitifully than it looks right now. That's the truth of it. But
yes,
we'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll see, man. It was dumbfounding. It was dumbfounding. But I will say this. Entertainment value was high because of that pick. Because absolutely, everything became a complete crapshoot after that.
Yeah. I mean, it made no sense. I think we started hearing murmurs like late 2 weeks ago that the Falcons could be in the market for a quarterback, but I think a lot of people really chalk that up to just, you know, draft time rumors. And are they trying to drive other teams to take quarterbacks early so they can get the defensive player they want? But it was totally 100% true, and it makes no sense.
Yeah,
because I mean, they could have at least traded down and got more capital and taken him later. I don't know. There are so many other ways they could have went that made sense. I don't think any of us, if they would have traded back in the first round and picked up a second round pick, an extra second round pick and done it, that takes the sting off of it a little bit. But to take him, stand pack, take him at 8 overall with the $180 million quarterback in tow, it didn't make any sense. And like you said, it could age even worse. Because it could not pan out. Kirk Cousins could play his contract out, and Michael Penix Jr. could flop.
You were planning on Kirk Cousins playing his contract out if you're giving him $180 million.
Exactly.
That was the whole idea of the damn. It's to win now. You can't win now and plan for the future at the same time. You can win now and then you be reactionary to the future, like the Chiefs have been for the past five, six, 7 years since they got Patrick Mahomes, and that works beautifully. But you can't do both at the same time, and it's just strange that Terry Fontenot went that direction because he put his job in real jeopardy. I knew it was already in jeopardy, but this is just icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you look at this and. Well, once again, I'm going to say it again. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense in any way. You have an opportunity to really build a team up because the NFC South is weak.
Yep.
The Bucs won it last year at 9-8. Like, this is a division that is wide open for the taking. There's questions at every single team on paper. I think even still, the Falcons are, if Kirk Cousins is 90% of what he was the last several years, they're the best team on paper. Because you got the Saints who have, you know, a struggling quarterback in Derek Carr, the Panthers who are at least going to take two or three more years to be of any competition, the Bucs who will probably stay around that mediocre zone. And like you're saying, you cannot be in win now mode and plan for the future at the same time because all that's going to lead to is mediocrity. You're going to win 8 to 10 games a year, max 10 games a year, and probably not make it past the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's just not what you play the game for.
Yeah, not at all. Well, Christian, I appreciate it, man. Good catching back up. We'll do it again next week.
Yes, sir. See y'all next week.
Yes, sir. He is Christian Fowler, at C Fowler BCM on X, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We also have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast, releases every single Tuesday at noon. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.